having girl problems. I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I got...
Hello, the internet, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name is Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and today we're talking about memes, how ideas spread in our modern world on this American life. That's my Ira Glass. I think I'm getting it, nailing that. So memes is a word that has kind of become synonymous with inside jokes on the internet, but it actually comes from the academic world. I hope you're proud, academia. Richard Dawkins is the name of the guy who came up with it. He was writing a book about his idea that humans as individuals aren't the base unit of evolution. I had always assumed when I had heard about evolution that it's this ultimately selfish enterprise that felt very simple and bleak and sort of state of nature. Everyone competes for finite resources, people who happen to have random mutations that give them a leg up or a leg at all, evolution joke. People with leg mutations or just mutations that are useful get to eat and make babies and die fat and old, rinse, repeat until we look like the pink apes that we are today. And Dawkins was like, yeah, but after we make babies, we're no longer self-interested. And in fact, you don't even need to make babies. Like if your sibling has a baby, you'll be naturally more altruistic, selfless towards that child. And his theory, Dawkins's theory, Charles, not NBA great Daryl Chocolate Thunder Dawkins of NBA fame. Charles Dawkins's theory was that we're not really individuals. That's just how we make sense of the world. But in reality, we are these collections of genes. I think the human genome coding ended up at 21,000, which was less than they thought. But so we're about 21,000 different genes, and those genes are what really want to reproduce themselves. A profoundly stupid metaphor I was able to use to make this make sense to me is that we're made up of like an NBA crowd's worth of genes. And so all these genes are like watching our every move and cheering us towards survival and reproduction. I told you this was a stupid metaphor, just bear with me. But they're also rooting for our family and our kids because they can kind of tell that our kids' inner NBA arenas are made up of half of them. They're all on the same team, or at least half of them are. And our nieces and nephews are made up of about 25%. And I guess Joffrey on Game of Thrones, this is why you don't have a child with your twin. Imagine if you were at an NBA game where a bunch of the fans in the crowd realized that everybody across the stadium was clones, that would be horrifying. Yeah, I mean, the first thing you have to do when you see your clone is try and kill it. Anyways, as he was inventing the smart and actually scientific and not completely stupid version of his theory that involved absolutely no NBA arenas, Dawkins realized that this is sort of how ideas work in the human brain. And so this is where he invents the word meme. It's the idea version of genes. His conception of memes were that they were like these useful or compelling, or I guess people in marketing call them sticky because people in marketing are the worst. Any idea that gets reproduced from person to person and remixed and evolves and passes from one person to the next, and the really useful ones go from one generation to the next. Just like genes that gave us legs, the ideas that are super useful to us and our survival get reproduced and passed down from generation to generation. So that's what it started out as. By his estimation, language was actually the most important meme. There's nothing written in our DNA that says we can speak. That was an idea someone came up with a long time ago, and other people repeated that idea because that seemed to work, and then it became a thing that everybody did. I guess every different religion you could think of as a meme, if that offends you, not your religion, but the other not right ones, are memes that simply survive through time because there is something about the original idea that lent itself to being useful and that evolved and could kind of roll with the punches and not put all their chips on their God returning at 4 p.m. tomorrow somewhere outside of Bakersfield for the apocalypse. And I guess that's still technically what a meme is. All the stupid bullshit we call memes on the internet today are these ideas that spread and are reproduced and evolve and pass from one person to the other and take on a life of their own. I mean, obviously they're not the ones that Dawkins had in mind that are like genes and passed down from generation to generation. They're lucky if they last a week on the internet. But on the other hand, memes can take over the planet quicker than genes and kind of quicker than anything, really. And so that's sort of what we're talking about, why memes are important. But that idea that a meme can kind of sweep the globe is a more recent change than I think I had realized going into this conversation, and a much more important one. There's a pitch in our writer's workshop right now from a writer named Blair Dodge from Australia that talks about Peter L. Jensen, who is the co-inventor of the loudspeaker, among many things. He's kind of known as the Dutch Edison, but he went to his grave feeling like he was responsible for the rise of fascism in Europe and Nazism in Germany because of the loudspeaker. And that seems crazy until you realize what a profound change the loudspeaker represented for memes and the spread of ideas. It sort of allowed you to get ideas out to more than just a room full of people at once. Before that, you just stood on a box and shouted if you had something to say. And when fascism and Nazism swept through a bunch of countries that were supposed to have their shit together, they used the hell out of the loudspeaker. Allowed you to take the idea inside your head and put that idea in the heads of stadiums full of people. And people with crazy ideas found that super useful. On today's editorial meeting, we discovered an experiment that says if a person repeats their opinion on a subject three times in a group discussing that subject, people in that group will believe that their opinion is the majority opinion, even if they know it's only that one person saying it three times. That idea just entered their head three times, and it turns out we're not nearly as discerning about the ideas that we take in and mix with our own ideas and reproduce as we might think. And so that's what we're going to be discussing on today's episode. If we gave up control of the memes and ideas that we let into our head and put in other people's head with the loudspeaker, what does that mean for the world today, where something as stupid as Sad Keanu can spread across the globe in 24 hours? Back at the end for some footnotes. Got the rap patrol on the cat patrol. Bulls that want to make sure my cask is closed. Rap critics to save money cash holes. I'm from the hood, stupid. What type of facts are those? I'm joined by Soren Bowie.
Hello.
And Cody Johnston.
Hi.
Both columnists and video stars. You guys have similar jobs. You have very different personalities, so I don't think of you as the same, but
yeah, we're sort of like siblings that are never really jealous or competitive with one another because we're so different and yet the same.
It works. So are there employees that you do think of as the same person?
Yeah, okay. Most everybody else.
Okay, good.
There's Soren's and then there's Cody's, and then
special
I just...
Special snowflakes.
Yeah. You can almost say your positions are redundant a little bit.
I wouldn't say that.
Could.
That sound
I'm
right.
Just saying you could if you wanted to. So today we're talking about memes, which I've been assured that is the correct pronunciation of that word, and you guys are not fucking with me.
Yeah.
Just sort of the way ideas that get spread around online, the way ideas flow online. A lot of build up to this podcast in the emails verse. Sent a lot of emails back and forth last night.
Yeah, we got a lunatic email from Jack last night all about how the internet was trying to kill him and that the internet was God now.
Yeah, you guys made me feel pretty crazy, but we'll get into it, why I think my internet is watching me. But Soren, you had sort of an interesting way of thinking about memes as sort of like a secret handshake.
Yeah, so I feel like the birth of memes is really, you have to look at what people value on the internet. And the internet, yes, it's this encyclopedia. It's great for harvesting knowledge, but that's not really what everybody uses it for. We really use it like a reverse telepathy. We can't read anybody's mind, but we want everybody to read our own minds. We can send our thoughts out to literally everyone in the world. We're just kind of
you're starting to sound crazy. You just started off real crazy. We're mind reading and shit.
Well, but we're not. It's the worst kind of superpower. Everyone can read our minds, and that's essentially how we're using it. We're putting it out there, and we're saying, when we're hungry, we're saying, this is what I'm going to be eating. This is when I'm going on vacation. Everything on Twitter, it's your craziest thoughts. That's what does the best on Twitter. And with that, there's this new currency among the social cachet, which is that you need wit. And if you don't have wit, then nobody takes you seriously. So the worst thing that could happen is that everybody's going to look at what you've created or what you have to say and disregard it as dumb, or even worse, they're going to disregard it as just naive, that you don't know enough yet. So you constantly have to prove that you're on the same level as everybody else for them to take you seriously. And everybody does that, or we started to do that with memes. Memes were like a secret handshake early on among 4chan and groups like that. When I say we, by the way, throughout the rest of this, I don't always mean us. I mean, just collectively, this is how everyone used the internet. In 4chan and in 9gag and sites like that, they created memes because it was a secret handshake. It was a way of saying, look, I belong here. I know what's going on. I'm savvy. I understand that this is who Willy Wonka was, that he was a condescending person, that now putting condescending Willy Wonka along with a little image macro, I know what I'm doing. We can all be cool. And so it was basically like getting into the club. It was the passcode you had to learn. And then as everybody else learned it and tried to play along too, immediately those memes expire. So you have to change it constantly. People are always updating it and thinking of a new way to beat the general masses. Say, well, we're still funnier. We know everything better than you.
You're talking about a specific type of internet meme, sort of the inside joke, which I think is what that word means to people now.
I think it has to. I think that if something goes viral, that's not a meme. If something goes viral and people continue to change it and alter it and manipulate it and everyone gets to play along, that's a meme.
Right. It's an idea that people grasp. It's a structure. It's a quote. A lot of people use meme to mean, hey, I made this picture with text on it. I'm making a meme. I see the phrase, let's make this a meme a lot. And that's not how it works. You just have an idea that catches on because there's something about it.
You see that a lot around the office. Me just being like, let's make it a meme. Hey, that's a meme. There's your meme right there.
There's your viral memes.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing. I mean, nobody can force a meme. It's something that everyone's latching onto this, whatever the dominating ideology is at the time, that's what people turn into a meme. So
capitalism is a meme?
No. I mean, in terms of pop culture. So Captain Picard, Star Trek is going to be popular online. It's just agreed that Star Trek is cool now. So you can make these Captain Picard memes because it reflects the ideology of now.
I mean, I think what you guys are getting at is that an article that is popular is not a meme because it goes out there, it's that article, and it's not evolving. It doesn't feel like it has a life of its own. Whereas memes, it's like an idea that goes out there and then sort of takes on a life of its own. It passes into other people. Other people sort of iterate on it and create new versions of that. They're not just passing it around and being like, here, look at this one original thing.
Right.
Some people are. I mean, some people are just saying, this one's funny, and then they're perpetuating it. And they have to. Not every single person is playing the game. Some people are just spectators, and they're like, hey, look.
Sure.
Look what everybody
else is doing.
But
it does require more than the one person. You ran that article recently by Ali Reid that was creating this terrible online profile. A lot of people saw that. It was on TV of some kind. Good Morning
Oprah.
Or something like that. Yeah, one of those Oprah shows. It's not necessarily a meme. It would be if, say, a bunch of other places started to do something like that. I'm going to make this terrible profile on this other site. And it was just a thing that caught on that everyone did, not necessarily the actual viral content. If I just said viral content out loud.
Yeah, and you did. I think that's the second time, actually, to make you director of viral content.
The ironic thing is that we call that viral content instead of memes viral content, when in fact, memes are more like a virus. You think about the way that in which they're used, they fall out of favor so quickly. It's like this weird arms race of people who are trying to be popular online where they'll start playing with a meme and then you have to continually come up with new ones because the minute that the general populace gets a hold of it, it's so uncool now. And now you have to move on to a new one. Ken I Has Cheeseburgers, that lasted 6 months, I think.
So that's actually really interesting because the guy who coined the word meme was writing a book about genetics. At the time, the general consensus was humans are selfish animals who are only here to reproduce and then take care of their children and eat and survive. And the book he created the word meme in was called The Selfish Gene. Not J-E-A-N, but G-E-N-E.
Yeah, like the name Gene, like Selfish Gene, this girl I used to know.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it was just a bitter, bitter dissertation about this one girl that scorned him years ago.
But so the thing that the self-interested human model of things doesn't really explain is people will go out of their way or lay down their lives to protect, you know, their nephew or something. It's not their offspring. It's their, you know, sister's offspring. But they're more likely to sacrifice their own lives for that. And that's altruism. And that doesn't totally make sense with the model of humans just being these sort of self-interested survival machines. And so his theory was that we're all sort of vehicles for genes, their goal is to perpetuate. So your sister and you have similar genetic material. Your nephew has the same genetic material as you. So like you guys are on the same team and your main interest is not your own personal best interest. It's making sure that your gene can survive across time and reproduce. So while he was doing that, he was like, I guess thoughts are like that. It was like kind of a speculative side point, but he was like, ideas kind of work that way too. These ideas will take on sort of a life of their own and they'll leave the person who first had them and like sort of replicate, keep kind of reproducing themselves and also evolving in different ways to make themselves more reproducible, make more people want to reproduce them. And one of the things that he was pointing to as being the original meme was language. Someone had an idea to like start making noises with their mouth and it was useful and so it caught on and other people started imitating that. That spread the same way that ICANN has cheeseburger spread. Arguably not as important as ICANN has cheeseburger, but it's just this idea that it's at least useful. It might not be correct, but it's at least useful to think of memes as sort of having a life of their own. And I think that's what you guys are kind of getting at when you're saying that it goes out there and people use them. Different people use them for different purposes. It can be, okay, we're in this club and we like this meme, so we're repeating it to each other and you're on the outside. And then tomorrow, okay, we all decide this meme's no longer cool because like the internet is anonymous. You need lots of code words, right?
Yeah, that's really interesting to think about it that way. It's like the semiotics point of view of it.
Because, I don't know what that means.
Okay, let me lay some knowledge down.
No, that's cool. Just
no,
keep going.
You're going to love this.
Just keep talking about why what I said was interesting.
So it's the signifier and the signified that we have signs for everything. That's what words are. And so like think about the word red. Red by itself is a sign for something that's sort of intangible, this concept of the color.
You're talking about stop signs. Red signs?
Right. No,
yeah,
just
no, I
red.
Know what you're talking about. I drove here to work today.
The reason that we know that red makes us feel a certain way is because culturally it has some context.
Not true.
So like red has the context of stoplights. It has the context of blood. It has like alarm. Yeah. Yeah. Red has a meaning to us, even though it was designed to just describe this color. But because it has this cultural context, now it means something. So that's all we're doing with memes, is we're creating these cultural references. So you have to already be up on it. You have to be up on the fact that this kid pumping his fist in the air, what was that one called? Successful child?
Success kid.
Success baby or whatever. Yeah. That look is so specific to somebody who's victorious. And then you working from that point of view and you're saying, okay, now how can we build up on this? It's almost like creating a new language. In fact, I'm not sure that image macros even existed before the internet. The idea of putting a picture behind it.
They've certainly evolved and kind of become a central language. Image macros being cool images with big five words written over them.
Impact font. It's also a way for people who don't necessarily know how to express themselves well to do that. Something good happens to you. I want to tell people about it. I'll take this picture of a kid with his fist pumping and use 10 words to describe the event. Bad luck, Brian. Something bad happens to you. You can't just tell a story or write a paragraph about it. You have to get this thing that people are familiar with and sort of use this structure of a quote to describe your own life. And then it sort of gives that idea and event to everyone. You lose the individuality of the moment to this meme.
So that's what I was when I like went on my crazy rant last night.
This was at 1:30 a.m.
Yeah. Keep in mind, I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing. Everything I'm saying right now is not something that I'm saying is bad and we're all screwed. I'm saying that a lot of the changes that you've seen since the internet has been a thing seem to have that same effect of kind of taking the individuality out of things, almost being less self-interested and more just about the idea of making things as easy to like spread ideas and spread memes as possible. Almost like it's really quick shorthand. In the past, we would maybe write a letter to someone explaining something bad happened to us. Now it's just quick shorthand, print it, get it out the door. It's just a very sped up and less personalized version of that. I think you see that also, and people just seem to be less self-interested than they were before, which is why maybe not a bad thing. We've talked in past episodes how we're always surprised. We wrote a lot about the NSA thing when it came out that they were sort of violating a bunch of people's privacy, and those articles did terrible because nobody gives a shit anymore. Yeah. It's almost like the question that Dawkins, the geneticist, was trying to answer, why people would do things that aren't in their self-interest and like lay down their life for their nephew. I feel that way about a lot of the behaviors that are becoming more popular in online meme culture. People just being less worried about their own privacy and the fact that the government might be able to just tap into whatever they're doing. That used to be a big deal and suddenly stopped being a big deal. Not paying for things and not feeling the need to like differentiate yourself seems to be kind of the way things are going. I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. It's just a really super efficient meme and idea spreading machine the internet is. And there seems to be a meme that has sort of taken hold that information needs to be free, share everything, get everything out there in a super efficient way. That is not necessarily good for the individual people, but it's good for the overall collective network. Like in the same way that when you look at certain insect colonies, the highest level of social order that you can have in an insect colony is one where everybody is doing a job for the greater good of the colony. Some of the worker ants don't get to reproduce, which is a bummer, but they just do their job because that's what's good for the overall colony. It seems like there's almost a sense where that's how we think about the web and the spread of information and the freedom of information these days.
There's a side of it also of content creators and people, because there will be people that create something and it catches on and it turns into a meme and then it's gone from them. You can't pinpoint that person anymore. It sort of gets lost in this sort of meme soup, this internet collective that we have. And so it's harder for people to rise to the top because the internet as a whole has taken that stance of, no, it's for everyone. This is everyone's, it's instant, it happens so fast. The internet has sort of forced us to change the way we think because it's so fast and our human brains can't keep up with it. So we sort of have these memes to like speed everything up because it's all 8 words.
Right.
We no longer have the time to really think about what we're going to say. We just sort of pop it out. Twitter takes so few characters to like say your thought.
We basically gave ourselves a whole new library of words almost. So you look at a BuzzFeed article now and the way that it's written, Cody certainly knows this, that it's one sentence and then a GIF. And the GIF is supposed to enhance the sentence. Sorry, it's a GIF.
It's a GIF.
Whatever. These GIFs get turned into memes all the time. It's a way of communicating a thought. Cody's right. It's the path of least resistance for communication. It's like the water of communication. We're saying these one very specific thing, and then the picture is what gives you all the context and what everything that you need for it. It's the laziest way of doing it.
It is lazy. It's not necessarily
it's
a bad
fast.
Thing, but it is fast. It's just the way to get it out. It's teaching us more efficient ways to communicate, even if they seem lazy. Siri is doing that as well. My Siri is broken now, but when it worked, you'd say something and it wouldn't necessarily quite know what you meant. And so you have to rephrase what you mean in the simplest way possible so the computer can understand. So it's sort of teaching us how to communicate with each other better and simply. So like I need to get this thought to my computer, and now in the future, I'll be able to communicate simple ideas to a person easier.
I generally reject the idea that we're getting in over our heads. Everything that's happened in the past 25 years and throughout history, the thing that seems to be true over and over is that we can adapt to anything. The human brain is just crazy adaptable and we'll figure it out. It just seems to be sort of a new reality. You know, our articles get copied all the time, but I've seen some comedy writers I really like taking to the internet, scolding people for copying a joke that they made and just taking their name off of it. And it's almost like, that's right. You get paid to do that. You put in a lot of work. You deserve credit for that. But it feels old-fashioned. Like, it's like, oh, well, what are you talking about?
Right,
man?
You put it on the internet. It's everyone's. Why are you making a stink about it?
Yeah, and it just seems to be a way that things have changed. That when I think about when I was 14 years old and there was no internet, how weird that would seem to me.
You used to have to fight to get your stuff seen, and now you have to fight to get people to know that the thing they're seeing is yours.
Right. I'm here, super duper. Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by GoDaddy. Remember them from the Super Bowl ads? So if you've got like a great idea for a business and want to start selling your products or services online, or maybe you're an established business owner looking for new customers, maybe you're interested in starting your own personal website, no matter who you are, GoDaddy wants to help you kick some ass online. As the world's number one domain registrar, GoDaddy currently manages over 57 million domains. Plus, they provide award-winning 24/7 customer support. Anytime you need help, just pick up the phone. If you've ever dreamed of building your own website, you need to get better dreams, but there's never been a better time to do that dream. Right now, GoDaddy's offering one new or transfer.com domain for just $2.95.
so you can start your website today. Visit GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code CRACKED295 to save 80%. Get your own .com for just $295. Some limitations apply, apparently, so you have to go to the website and find all the details. And if you like those details, just remember to type in the promo code CRACKED295 at GoDaddy.com, and it'll help us, and it'll help you chase that dream. What they gonna make up?
Every time I read about, see some shit they make up. Do you guys have favorite memes or any memes that you want to talk about?
I like that dope language for a while.
What is it? You're going to have to
explain. Oh, it's just a picture of a dog originally, and it's just phrases like, such dog. It's just using language wrong in a way. It's a new I can't has cheeseburger way of speaking. Much awesome. So much, yes. It's just using language wrong, which I have always really enjoyed. But then there was a period of weeks where every single person did it in every single possible way you could imagine. Here's Disney Princess with dog language, and it just kills it for me once everyone does it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking at a screen cap from another thing that I'm out of the loop on, the Hobbit movie. It's the dragon looking at a hobbit, as best as I can tell. And it says, you shall not pass, so dragon, wow, one ring to roll them, lol. Wow, tasty hobbit sees such desolation.
And when you say it like that, I hate it so much. But I really enjoyed it. And then corporations do this stuff all the time. They'll notice something maybe a week later, and they'll make an ad like, such starburst, much juicy, or whatever the hell they're going to do. And that means that the club is over. You can't, you can't use that to get into the club anymore.
The Wolcats language, the I can't ask cheeseburger, that lasted a long time.
It really did, yeah.
This was like the second version of that, and it lasted a single week.
Right, and it was years later.
I wonder if it was just like a less complex language or something, and like you guys who speak it, I know you spoke it around the office for a full week.
Oh, it was the worst.
I wonder if it just exhausted the possibilities quicker. People will still be like writing epic poetry and ICANN has cheeseburger speak in the future.
Because ICANN has cheeseburger, it wasn't the first meme, obviously, but it was one of the first big, oh, everyone knows about this, everyone's making these and talking about this, but it happened earlier on,
right?
So the deterioration of that, the overspreading of the meme, took longer, whereas now something happens and it takes just a couple of days because everyone is on the internet every single day all the time, so we can't keep up with it anymore.
I mean, I totally missed the Doge thing. I don't know what I was doing.
Well, you're okay for it.
I understand exactly why you like that. There's just pandemonium to it and just this weird lawlessness.
Right, and it's just, I don't know, there's something that always tickles me about using words wrong. Verbing nouns, taking a noun, turning it into a verb, things that don't sound correct, but now I don't. Now I don't know what to do. I also like anything that, there are a lot of Futurama, you can call it memes, it's just quoting Futurama.
Right.
A lot of image macros that do that I enjoy, simply because I like the things that they're quoting.
There's one that I really like that, don't remember the name of it, so you'll have to help me. But there's one that I really enjoyed for a while because everyone was so on point with it, which was the pre-financial crisis guy. It was just a kid from like the 70s. He was like, he lost his job, went across the street and got a new job, or like found his job in the classifieds. And it was just this outdated idea of what it meant to like be successful in the world and like how easy it was to get a car, to get a house and everything in the 70s. It's just him smiling. It's a yearbook photo.
Old Economy Steven.
Yeah, Old Economy Steven, that's it.
Fails out of high school, gets job, buys house, retires happy.
Yeah. Everyone that I had seen was so well done. Everybody was very smart about culturally what was happening then and what's happening now, which I'm always shocked by the internet when it knows something about history.
Right. Yeah, this is fun. Another problem I think I have with memes is once you're in on the structure, on the joke, on the idea behind the joke, I can't enjoy them because once I read the top line, I know what the bottom line says. Because most of these are built on a twist. Bad Luck Brian is, here's a good thing that happens. Oh no, it's actually terrible. So there's always this reversal, but once you know the kind of reversal, it loses all the effect. Like, I'm gonna read the top, becomes homeowner 22. No, that's not a good example. Never mind, pass.
Next.
It's not super entertaining to read them all at once. Who's getting the meaning out of this? We're just looking at a Google image search
page. You mean the memeing?
Old No, I said meaning.
Yeah, memeing.
Yeah, it's just like 20 of the same joke structure over and over again.
But nobody consumes memes like this. That's the thing. I don't think anybody goes through and reads all of them at once, except maybe those Inspiration Wolf ones. You get memes in small doses. You get right. them on your Facebook wall when somebody finds a particularly good one.
Right, because for every good one, there's 1,000.
Yeah, a lot of bad ones. Well, because everybody wants to play the game. That's the thing. When you have this reverse telepathy, everybody's putting their thoughts out there at once, and there's just this clogged system now.
I think the reverse telepathy thing's interesting, too, is sort of the difference between now and then. The fact that reading minds was seen as such a superpower, that seems kind of ridiculous now because everybody can read everybody's mind. People just put what's on their mind out there on right. Twitter immediately.
And in like 10 years, that's going to be even worse. Reading minds won't even be considered anything. No one will care.
And you'll be able to see what everybody is seeing and all that.
There's also this weird kind of mind control. Like, I'm thinking of something along the lines of...
so crazy. I don't know.
Well, I thought about this at like 3 in the morning.
Jack pulled us all through the looking glass last night.
Stuff like planking, where that didn't catch on until someone said, this is catching on. People didn't do it until BuzzFeed posted, hey, this is a thing, you gotta do this thing. There are memes like that that pop up where someone is literally saying, this is a meme now, you gotta do this. But not because it's becoming popular or spreading, but simply because they want to invent their own. And it works sometimes. We're looking at all these pictures of people planking, and they're not doing it because they found it and they discovered, ooh, this is a fun thing. They were told
right.
that this would get their picture up on Google Image Search.
Extreme ironing, too. Predated planking. Maybe it was planking became like the...
Where you iron on a human?
No, you have an ironing board, but you're doing some extreme sport while yeah. you're ironing.
Right,
oh, I
yeah.
hate these guys.
There were all these follow-ups. Owling was an attempt mm-hmm. at it. It's like, well, that's you just picked another word and added ing and are telling people to do it.
T-bowing, too. It feels
I kind of liked
like,
T-bowing, though.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of why it happens, and it's just people proving that they exist in this culture, like that they're tapped in. That's all it is. I get the joke. We're all cool.
Should not say I liked T-bowing. I feel like there were good opportunities to do that in a place where you shouldn't be being that dramatic. But all the Google image searches are just like him and then people outside of church
well, I don't know,
doing it. So the idea of meme is sort of the idea equivalent of genes. The best thing that a gene can be is somehow useful to the humans who are sort of spreading it around. It seems like a lot of the ones that we're talking about today are just useful for the purposes of getting to the end of your workday or
telling a quick story or...
But I do feel like early on when Napster was a thing and everyone was talking about, well, the internet's going to allow people to just splinter off into like all these tiny little niches. Is that how you... I'm having trouble with pronunciation today. All the words that I've only read and never say out loud are coming back to haunt me.
Hound you.
Yes. There was sort of a sense that we were all going to like just be able to explore all the things that we were individually interested in. But I feel like more and more, the more social media platforms we have, the more everybody does the same thing and laughs at the same jokes and has the same inside jokes. Whereas with high school, it's you and your friends who have a specific inside joke that is specific to you guys. The whole country has the same inside joke.
Right.
You know.
When you refer to the internet, it's one thing. It's like, oh, this was big on the internet. There
right.
aren't factions of it, really. I mean, there are, but not that you talk about, really. To borrow a David Wong phrase, it's expanded our monkey sphere to, like, as many people as we can fit.
But you don't really know those people or like...
Right, I don't actually care about them. I agree with their words that I'm reading. Side note, for the past 5 minutes, Soren has been looking at memes of himself. If you Google Soren Bowie meme, you'll find a couple.
Well, now I'm on to which meme are you, which is a quiz that I was going to take and determine what meme I was.
Obviously, you're the Soren Bowie meme. Dropped out of school in 7th grade. Doesn't matter, is handsome. My name is Jeff Ablin. I'm so handsome I just busted 37.
See, this is out of touch I am. I don't know what even my own meme means.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just a lot of pictures of Soren.
The word handsome is in it, so there's that.
So it can't be all bad. Or untrue.
Hey guys, real quick. So you probably tried Hulu on your computer, but Hulu Plus, way better. With Hulu Plus, you can watch
current episodes of shows like The Daily Show. You can go back and watch Lost. You get ad-free movies and kids shows. You can watch it wherever you want. You can watch on your phone, iPad, on the train, supposing you have a phone or iPad on that train with you, at work, if your boss is crazy cool, at the dentist, in the bathroom, gross, but, you know, people do it. I'm not going to ignore that people do it. Or you could just block off a day and binge over the weekend. You'll also get access to originals that you can't get anywhere else. Check out the new show Deadbeat, comedy about a pot-smoking pothead who talks to ghosts. So for only $7.99 a month, you can get your shows anytime, anywhere. That's like a quarter a day, guys. Right now, sign up for HuluPlus.com/cracked. Get 2 weeks full access totally free. That's a whole extra week more with this special offer when you sign up at HuluPlus.com/cracked. And that helps us if you type that in. So get with it. Start streaming TV now with Hulu Plus. Back to the episode.
So should I talk about the crazy thing that I wrote that made you
guys
be like...
Yes, please. Yeah, because now I want to argue with you.
So it's sort of thinking about this idea of the singularity. Another thing that used to be super scary to everybody about 15 years ago when the Terminator franchise was coming out. And, you know, this idea that an artificial intelligence would surpass us at some point. It would just be beyond our control and they would decide to kill us immediately because fuck us. That would be the end of humanity. And it's not just the Terminator movies that think that's a possibility or pretend it's a possibility. A lot of philosophers have been thinking about this for a long time because it's kind of inevitable if you look at how much smarter and how much more processing power our machines are getting yearly. It's inevitable, and people think it's going to happen sooner than we think. And first of all, if you've seen robots lately, just the latest version of robots, we don't need to be scared.
I wish we could just throw to a clip ridiculous. Of them playing soccer.
Oh my God.
And falling all over the place.
Robots suck. The latest, most amazing version of robots are fucking ridiculous.
They can't stand up.
Yeah, they can't stand up. They can like barely walk. There's that one that the military made that like runs really fast, and that's kind of scary, but it doesn't even have arms. You could just push it over. Sorry, we're just watching this video of this robot playing soccer, and it stands in front of the ball. It takes it 3 seconds to lift its foot off the ground.
It's the equivalent of what Cody likes about the Doge meme. It's this. It's them trying to kick it, and they fall down. Nothing goes right for these dumb robots. They're just terrible.
The most beautiful failure in the world.
So I'm not worried about robots taking over, and I think maybe this is why everybody is like, fuck the singularity. Nobody's scared of robots. They're not getting smarter, or they're not getting any more athletic, any better at soccer, which I think was our number one fear. Is that
they'd be better than us at soccer. All those soccer guys lose their jobs.
Yeah. Also, nothing but ties forever.
So I think it's interesting to think about. There's this documentary and book called The Corporation that thinks about corporations, big Fortune 500 corporations, as individuals, because that's legally what they are. They have all the rights of freedom of speech or whatever under the Constitution of an individual. So they looked at the behavior of corporations as if they were an individual person. And when you do that, you realize corporations are sociopaths. They'll let people die in order to save some money because they know it's better for the bottom line. Car companies will release cars that they know have a 10% chance of failing, but their models tell them that it will save them money if they don't do a massive recall right now. That's been shown over and over again. So while corporations aren't one guy sitting in his basement thinking about how he can save money by killing people, I feel like that thought experiment was interesting and like sort of a helpful way to think about corporations. And in that way, and not because I think that the internet is...
Are we there already?
...is a person who's scheming. I think it's interesting to think of the internet as a entity. Soren's just looking at me like, oh, you fool. No, but to think about the internet as one individual artificial intelligence, sort of a massive neural network of different people, each acting almost as neurons. If you think of it as there's this ant colony that took over half the globe while we weren't looking in the past 50 years, and it's just like everywhere and it kills other ant colonies. The internet spread way faster than that. And when you look at the ideas and the values that have taken hold since the internet rose up, that sounds so crazy, since the internet became the most important thing in the world, the values, like I said earlier, people become less self-interested and more about making the internet as a network more efficient. Information must be free. That's just something that I take for granted now, that we don't pay for things really online. It feels crazy to pay like $3 for an app. But it all seems to be, like we were talking about, we used to be one type of society where their genes were telling them to jump in front of a bus and save their nephew. But for the most part, everybody was suspicious of each other and very concerned about privacy and concerned about their government looking over their shoulder. And then online, everybody's just totally cavalier and don't care about paying for things, don't expect to be paid for things, and want to be totally open with their thoughts. And it's almost like the values that have sort of taken hold online are good for the internet as a network, as an ant colony, in terms of taking over the globe and one side of the internet knowing exactly what's happening on the other side. It's all sort of interconnected and there's a free flow of ideas. I mean, it's more convenient in a lot of ways, but it's also kind of dangerous, I guess. A thing that I think people would have been more scared of in the past before the internet dug into our brains and started controlling our thoughts.
There we go. There it was. The claws come out. You know, that's actually, believe it or not, less crazy than it sounded last night. It does make a lot of sense the way that you just said it, because it is really easy to think now about the internet as one single entity. We do it all the time unconsciously. And
I say hello to the internet at the beginning of every show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you think about David Wong's article about the monkey sphere, that you can't actually think about all those people as individual people. Instead, what we do is we just group them all into as one person. When we talk about the internet,
sorry,
has
gotten terrible. Can I just jump in here and explain what the monkey sphere is? Yeah. So it's this David Wong article, one of the first huge hits for our site, and it was a huge hit on his site when he was running Pointless Waste of Time. But basically, the idea is that each human and also all chimpanzees have the ability to differentiate and like actually think of as another person. There's only a certain number of people that we can actually think of as other people. I think it's 125.
He does a really good job of explaining that you still acknowledge that other people are people. Your garbage man, you know he's a person. You understand you're a smart person, but you don't think of him as a person. When you're throwing away broken shards of glass, you're not thinking about the possibility that he might cut himself. He's right. Just this entity that comes and takes away your garbage. And you can't. You can't possibly think about every single person as another person because you would go crazy. There's so much suffering out there. There's all this tragedy in third world countries, in civil wars, in
don't make
countries.
It seem understandable. It's just the way our brain is built.
That's there's what I'm saying.
Just,
you'd go crazy.
It's impossible. That was the size of the social groupings of whatever we were before we were humans. And so our brain was built to know that many people.
Yeah, if you had the same compassion for everybody in the world that you have for, say, your own brother or your own mother, there's no way you'd get anything done. You'd
right.
be a weeping mess in your entire life. So you can't possibly think about everybody as actual people. And we do that every day with the internet. We treat it as this one singularity. You see something online and it's so dumb and it's so bad and it's so quintessentially internet that you go, ah, the fucking internet. It's this one being. And so it is really easy to think about it that way.
I always thought that the problem was that we were all anonymous before Facebook. I was like, oh, everybody's so mean on the internet, but it's because they get to hide behind some avatar and some fake name. And then Facebook happened. Have you guys heard of this? Facebook? Mm-hmm. It happened. Mm-hmm. And
vaguely familiar.
When you go on our fan page on Facebook, people with their name and their picture are just like saying the worst things. They're like, fuck you guys. Just really the sorts of thing you wouldn't expect people to want to share with their
especially,
friends.
Especially on the page that is them. That's the thing that represents them the most on the internet.
But it seems to be sort of just agreed that it's okay to treat people like garbage on the internet, even though they're people. And even though you can see their name and their picture, they're not inside your capacity of the grouping of people that you're able to actually conceive of as people.
Yeah, they're all grouped into one. I think of internet commenters as just this one person, basically. They've all been diluted into this one guy who I really don't like at all.
YouTube commenters, there's just one person. And they comment on all YouTube videos.
I know what he looks like.
You create,
right. 13. It's one 13-year-old kid.
But I do think that it's interesting to bring up the monkey sphere because the internet is yet another technology that is sort of putting us in touch with and giving us power over huge groups of people that we can't possibly conceive of. It's almost like the communication equivalent of when militaries figured out that you could drop bombs from planes. You just lie over a city. Technically, you know that there's 500,000 people down there, but you don't really know it. And in the same way, you can just be a total asshole to everyone online because you don't really know that they exist.
It right. also gives you unbridled access to everybody. Hannibal Buress has this bit about the thing about the internet and Twitter and Facebook is that now he can pick up his phone and have somebody tell him that he sucks. As opposed to when it used to be like somebody had to shout it at him right. or he had to be somewhere particular. Now he can be lying in bed and pick up his phone and somebody says, you should eat a dick. And he's like, oh, okay, thanks. Because we have that new reverse telepathy, we can give even the biggest celebrities our thoughts. We can give Obama, well, assuming that he actually read his own Twitter feed, you're giving Barack Obama like exactly what you think about him, which is a terrible way to live.
Right. It's sort of challenging our brains and ideas about communication, this monkey sphere, to evolve probably quicker than we can. I think it's 150 people is what it said. I feel like the existence of the internet and the way it functions and how it is just a sea of everyone's thoughts, it's sort of forcing us to go, oh, there's more than 150 people that I need to care about. Eventually, it'll get us there if our brains can handle it.
But women won't be able to give birth anymore. Our brains will be too big.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's...
I think that's the lesson we all learned here today. No more births, that just C-sections.
That was the last sentence of that email that Jack sent.
So in the movies, the singularity happens, and it's this brain made of wires that is like a separate... We just accidentally created Lawnmower Man, and he's in the virtual reality, and he's going to kill us all. But sort of thinking about the idea that the singularity has already happened, and it's inside your house right now.
It's inside your pocket. It's right. like it's on you.
It's in your ears right now.
But it's kind of shaping us to, in its self-interest. Before we started using it, we would have been like, oh yeah, that's useful. We're using it more as a way to just send charges back and forth. Oh, meme, repeat the meme, change the meme a little bit.
We're inadvertently feeding it.
And... you know, growing it and speaking its language. And
we're also relenting even our brain to it. I mean, now you don't remember nearly as much as you probably used to. This is all speculation. I don't ever think long about anything. If I can't remember something from Cool Runnings, I'll sit there. I won't think, well, was it John Candy or John Goodman that was in that movie?
It's John Candy.
I know, because I looked it up. And so you immediately will go look it up. And your brain is capable of doing that. Even if you don't remember something instantaneously, you can sit there for a long time and eventually you will remember it. We don't really utilize that anymore. That part of us is sort of atrophied because you look it up immediately.
It's something we haven't done with the internet yet. What we have done is we've taken everything in the real world and created an internet version of it. You have Amazon. This is all the stuff you can buy in the real world. You have dictionary.com. It's a library, a virtual everything.
I'm adding all of these as bookmarks to my dictionary.com.
Yeah, yeah, there's a thesaurus one as well.
What?
I know. But we haven't yet really done things that the internet made us think of. We're still using the internet as an extension of the real world as opposed to, oh, the internet is this new thing that we couldn't really fathom, so what's the best use of this new technology? We're still using it to just transfer everything. We're transferring our real lives to the internet as opposed to using the internet.
Yeah, I also want to just say really quickly, I mean, we're looking at this from an objective point of view and thinking tacitly that we're above this, that we don't that we don't actually do this. And I think everyone at home probably does too. They're like, oh yeah, I get that that's why memes are important, but I'm not a meme guy or girl. That's not really what I do. But you're complicit in this because I think about times when I go home for Thanksgiving or I'm around my parents or around friends and they're like, hey, you know what you should see is like a grumpy cat online. You should see it. I get immediately insulted because they think that I have to start that far back with the internet and I shouldn't. Or when my friends send me a video and they say, here, this is really funny. My first instinct is to say, as soon as I watch it, I've already seen it. I say, I've seen it. And I don't have to do that. I can just watch it and be like, oh, yeah, this is really funny.
Yeah, thanks
but
for the thing.
I need to somehow make them aware of my stripes. I'm a veteran at this.
Like when someone starts telling a joke, you're not like, shh, heard it. I've heard it.
Yeah,
like,
you don't do that.
Yeah, you don't like go out of your way like a fucking asshole.
There's something about the internet that makes you want to do that. And that's all memes are. It's a bunch of people saying, yeah, we get it. We're the ones who get it. And then when everybody gets it, they're like, that's stupid. It's played out.
Right, because you want to be the first one. People share things online because they want to inform people or seem smart to people they know or share something that no one has seen or make someone laugh because of something. That's like the three reasons. Also food pictures.
It's interesting. I was watching Cave of Forgotten Dreams, that like a Verna Herzog documentary about the oldest cave that we've discovered with human paintings on the inside. It was sealed off for like thousands of years, and you can see...
Oh, is this the one that a kid found it with his dog?
That was Lassie, I think. They just take you in there and they show you the paintings, and it's like this document from prehistory, which is crazy. We've covered on a past episode how 99% of our history happened before we started writing 5,000 years ago. And so we only have these really brief glimpses of what life was like prior to written language, and this is one of them. And the things that are drawn on the side are animals that they hunt. And there's one that's like a naked woman, kind of a cat lady-ish sex thing. And if you think about it, the images that we share online and like on Pinterest are photos of our food, which is what they were doing with the animals. They were just super hungry and going out to hunt, or just coming in from the hunt. And one cool thing they showed is that when you use torches in the cave, it looks like the animals are running because of how the fire flickers or whatever. And so they were creating this really complex art that was just essentially the bullshit that we share on.
It's really interesting. It's like, what's worth sharing? You pictures of your pet, your horse, and also the story of you. There's a hunt. And
right.
You want to see
selfies.
The hunt.
Yeah.
We did this. This should be immortalized. History will want to know.
There's not a lot of self-representation. It's just food and women.
Yeah. And like, and cats. Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. Cat women. Like cat people. So furries. Furries
like
aren't
a
weird.
Sexy cat. If,
yeah.
Just tell me kind of slowly what it looks like. But also their hands. That's really common too. Anasazi stuff, Native American cliff art. And these, clearly I can now see pictures from these caves in France. Everybody like put their hands on the wall. It was just having interacted with the world in some way. Even if you don't know what to do, you don't have language, you don't know what to draw.
Yeah, you
just
can't
put your
write
hand
your
up
name,
there. Yeah.
So it's just like,
I was here. Look at me.
I think they think it was a woman possibly drawing these because the hands were really small. We have this article, 8 online fads you didn't know were invented decades ago. People used to dress up their cats and like put funny little sayings underneath the picture and then like just send it to each other as postcards. A hard luck crowd, and then 3 cats with little bandages on their heads.
Taking a beauty nap.
Taking a beauty nap. They didn't use lolcat speak. That is our contribution.
That's all us.
To history. They put a cat in a little chair and wrote, "What's delaying my dinner?"
Classic.
Speaking from the cat's point of view.
Classic cat. In a dress. On a stool.
Fan art. You know, you go online and search. My most traumatic one was Inspector Gadget and Penny.
Oh.
I searched for an image of them for an article, and what I saw, I'll never recover from. But that goes way back. That was basically the first type of comic book. The second a new character was created, there would be like a porn version of that character. So we've always been the same in a lot of ways. We just have higher fidelity. One of the things that people didn't used to have is the ability to exactly replicate something immediately and 1,000 times. It would change as it went and probably get progressively stupider, and ours just stays exactly as stupid as it was when you created it. I was talking about how crazy it is that nobody cares about paying for things, and file sharing is like this new version of humanity that is not self-interested or economically motivated. The truth is that has been a concern every single time any new technology is invented. The last major one was the VHS tape, home movies. Before that, people didn't get to watch movies at home unless they were on TV or they had like a film projector. And when the VHS was created, you can go back and see the PSAs. It's a film industry freaking out. This is going to put an end to movies. This is going to ruin Hollywood, because they just assumed that people would be like swapping videotapes in back alleys and stuff. And it actually goes all the way back to recorded music composers and members of the orchestra. We're like, this is going to be the end of music because now you don't need to come to the concert hall to see it. So a lot of the things that we're talking about and that I'm speaking apocalyptically about are not new at all and just seem new.
Right, and they're always figured out and it's fine.
And I don't know if we want like a silver lining to this, but in researching memes, I saw that memes are commonly used for ESL classes now. Because the one example I can think of is
ESL
Captain
being
Picard,
English as a second language.
Yeah, so you look at an image of Captain Picard looking imploringly at somebody, like a why the fuck would you do that kind of look. And it's so quintessentially that, that you're already starting with context, whether you know what face he's making, or the we got a badass over here, which is
Neil Tyson.
Yeah, Neil Tyson deGrasse. DeGrasse.
Neil deGrasse.
Hey, it's saying we got a badass over here. That what it does is it's basically it's pulling out the essence of some characteristic or some facial expression that we make, and then it becomes much easier to understand the words around it. So what we're really doing is we're finding these things that are quintessential to being a human, like that rage face nerd, the sad face.
Oh, the rage comics.
Yeah, the rage comics. It's such a quintessential look. You recognize it immediately.
I'm even thinking of just Spanish class. There was, you know, here's a chart of these faces and here's what the emotion is. And this means happy, this means sad. We're creating these way more complex emotions. You can't look at, oh, we got a badass over here. That's not an emotion you would learn in a language class. That's very specific. That we're sort of creating this broad spectrum
donde
of new
está
ideas. Yeah.
Biblioteca. Yeah. That's my Spanish.
Rage face. Yeah.
But yeah, they're using them in classes all the time now because it makes it so much easier to understand. And it's much
and
more
fun.
Nuanced. Yeah, it's much more nuanced than just contento.
Yeah. Right. I think you're right, though, that all those iterations, like when we were looking at that meme of the 70s guy from The Good Economy, and I was like, oh, this is terrible. This would be terrible to read those over and over again. But those are all the discarded ones. And there's one of those that's going to last that is the best version of that joke. And that's really what the internet's good at, is just iterating until you find whether it's the funniest person writing it or someone just accidentally writing the funniest thing. You will find the funniest, most perfect caption for that image. And then you can use it to teach people the English language, I think is really what it's all about. People.
So more memes is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Keep putting them out there and I'll keep being angry.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with the file sharing thing, the fact that that's no longer an issue. If we think of the insect colonies where there's no self-interest and everyone is just doing whatever the best thing is for the colony, if that's the highest form of an insect or a non-human society, then the people who aren't hoarding their ideas or their artwork or the thing that sort of sustains and nourishes a culture, a society where people are just selflessly giving it away or at least taking it and stealing it and it becoming
having it for
yeah
himself.
It's like the creators are just the worker ants, but it's not great for them, but they're there and they do their job and it's not possessive, you know, nothing's standing in the way to like sort of gum up the works. And maybe that is the highest form that a culture can take, is just free flow of ideas, instantaneously iterating on an idea until you get the best one. Obviously we're currently mostly doing that with stupid photos and finding the best captions for them. But eventually that's going to be what the internet is really great at. And scientists are using sort of that crowdsourcing model to figure out really complex scientific questions by like sort of gamifying it. I just used so many fucking buzzwords right there.
Yeah, no, that was really good. That was a good thesis, Jack.
All right, that was our discussion. Certainly not scientific, but I think there's at least interesting thought experiments in there about sort of humans as vehicles built to spread our genes and memes and the internet as a giant robot ant colony, I guess. Just don't tell anyone you think that and you'll be fine. Something I'm not sure I made clear with my crazy ramblings when I was talking about the values that have sort of risen up since the internet was born that don't seem to be motivated by self-preservation and that I suspect would make the least amount of sense to pre-internet me. We talked about not caring about privacy, and we've talked about that on past episodes, but the unwillingness to pay for things online might seem sort of self-interested and obvious, but prior to the internet, I used to buy a CD every week. That's like 15 songs, two of which I'd probably like on an album that cost $20, and a lot of people did that. And then recently I spent 3 weeks not buying the Hype Machine app because it cost a few dollars, and it gave me like access to all of the music. All the music the internet was blogging about, I can now access through this app. But I spent 3 weeks being like, ugh, I wish that one app that I had seen and that looked really useful to me the other day didn't cost $2. So there's like a sense in which instinctively deciding not to pay for stuff, even stuff that's worth the price, is not self-interested. It's like a reflexive thing that's not good for you, but it's good for making a giant network more efficient, because having to pay for stuff requires a bunch of security and privacy, and it makes building the internet hard and makes getting around and doing things just slows up, gums up the works. And all I'm saying is the only way that that makes sense is if the internet is a giant self-aware sentient hive mind that is controlling us and will be telling me which famous actress it wants me to kill any day now. At least we can all agree on that, right, guys? All right, on to footnotes. We listened to yet another remix of a Black Album Jay-Z song. Last week's episode was all about the Gray Album, and I was like, the internet hasn't made a better mashup album since then. And the internet was like, oh, hey, here, check out my better mashup of one of the songs on the Gray Album. And I was like, oh, shit, you're crazy for this one, the internet, because it's really good. That was the Benji Boko remix. Benji Boko, B-O-K-O. You can like him on Facebook, and he just released a whole damned hour of hip-hop remixes on SoundCloud because the internet is a wonderful place. We heard the R3K, aka Riley Keating, remix of Kid Cudi's Falling Star. According to a Pigeons and Planes blog post from 2 years ago, I'm really late on this one, R3K, or Riley Keating, replaced the instrumental and lead vocals off Dan Black's Symphonies with Florence and the Machine's Cosmic Love, and added it to an old Kid Cudi song. I just found it because I was like over Kid Cudi for a couple of years. I really liked that one song that everybody likes. And then I saw him at Coachella 2 weeks ago, and he was just like so good and excited and energetic and just an awesome performance. So I decided I needed to really like him again, and the song helped. Thanks, Riley Keating. And we're gonna ride out on We the Common by Tao and the Get Down Stay Down, which is a song I've loved for a while. And then the coolest of my sister's cool coworkers, Greg, had it on his best of 2013 Spotify list, and I decided it was okay for me to share it with you guys because I'm a coward. I need validation before I do that. And yeah, we'll ride out on that one. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and we're back next week with more podcast. Thanks.